There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday. Phone number and the text line, the same. And as I live up, I continue to live up to my New Year's resolution using the area code 251-343-0106. Gets you through on a call or a text, 251-343-0106. And maybe you want to put that in your contacts, because 7 days a week, live shows, local folks from the opulent and gold-gilded studios of FM Talk 106.5 right at Airport and 65. We're doing shows, so it may be a weekday show, weekday evening, Saturday morning, a Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon. We got shows for you. You're going to want to comment, so keep that number handy. 251-343-0106. In addition to, with the FM Talk 106.5 app, you'll see a microphone icon on the front page. If you press that, then it lets you record a message, and then it sends it to the station. We can play it back here on the air. So some of the ways to get in touch with us today. All right, good to get this man back in studio and fresh off the first week in Montgomery. Representative Matt Simpson, good to see you.
Oh, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I will say this too. So I'm watching the State of the State address, and I said, Representative got some good seats, man.
That was, and what an incredible experience. They called and said, we'd like you to escort the governor on the stage for State of the State. She's going to mention your bill, and would you like to escort the governor? It was incredible. And then I got there, and they said, okay, you're directly behind the governor.
Hey, so, we were all looking at you. We're like,
yeah, it was. I'm a history buff. Like, yeah. I'm a nerd. I'm a political nerd. I'm a history buff. To have that experience, to walk in, and they say, ladies and gentlemen, the governor of Alabama, and you walk in, you see the cameras flash, you see up there, you kind of walk through, and you get around, and you're sitting around, and you're looking at the history of how many states of the states have been given from this podium and mm-hmm. in this room with all the, you know, you look at every constitutional officer that's there, you look at everyone through. I mean, that is just an experience that I'll never forget. Happened to wear a red tie that just happened to match what the governor was wearing.
And I don't want to get you in trouble, because the governor did pick you to be up there, but that pantsuit was giving me Chairman Mao, but I'm sorry. Governor already has her opinions about me. So, but it did match.
It did match.
Very
did.
Matchy.
That was not planned. That was a my wife's specialty. She said, you have to, you know, it's Republican.
Yeah,
you got to wear the red tie. Mm-hmm. And so she did really well. I've had a lot of people say, hey, I saw the red tie. I saw you. You look like security a little bit. And I was like, well, you know.
You look like security.
It worked out well. But, you know, Speaker Ledbetter and the governor's office and having that opportunity to do that, that was just something special. That is something I will never forget.
Well, we're all looking at you. I hope that didn't make you nervous.
Well, look, I had instructions, man. They told me, like, I had some people instruct me, like, you can't smile too big, you can't yawn, you can't cross your legs, you can't manspread your legs. You have to be.
Oh, I'd be hosed.
Like, I mean, it was one of those things of like you have to be attentive, but you can't nod off. Like, you can't. You have to focus.
Wait a second. I would argue that we see this at a federal level.
Mm-hmm.
There's some nodding off that goes on. You watch a State of the Union address, and there's members of Congress asleep, you know, drool coming out their mouth. If they could do it in Washington, can't we do it in Montgomery?
Sean, I walked in. I had one conversation with the governor's office. My single goal that I had conversation when I talked with the governor's office was, I just do not want to be a meme come Wednesday. As long as I don't mess up and don't become a meme, I don't trip across the stage. Yeah. The only thing that comes back from is something like, oh, look what this guy did over here. So I was very attentive. No slouching, none of that. It was awesome.
I never thought about that. With cameras on, there's always a chance if you do something, by the next day somebody on Twitter has got you as a me. Okay. I keep the cameras away from us here. That's why we'll do radio in this case. You know, and obviously a lot to talk about the first week in session, but I do want to talk about the bill you discussed with me back when you had filed it, or, you know, not long after, and the bill that had the governor have you right there on the dais with her. And this is got a lot of discussion here on this radio station back then. Obviously, this week it has. Can you explain it in your words what the bill is proposing to do for changing a crime into a capital crime?
So,
and he's a he's a prosecutor by trade, so he knows this stuff.
So I've done this. This is a specialty. I've prosecuted these specific cases for years. So what it would do is anyone that is convicted of rape, sodomy, or sexual torture of a child under the age of 12 would be eligible for the for capital punishment if charged as such, and at that point could receive the death penalty.
Okay, and I'm trying to be obtuse here, but I want to ask this one. Use terms that, I mean, it's child molesters, right? I mean, I know those are legal terms, but
so I don't want to go too far.
I don't either. I just want to, I'm
there's
trying
a difference between touching and actual other stuff.
Okay.
That these would all be the other stuff.
Okay. All right. All right. That's because I saw the words delineated in there, and I said, but it's okay. Now I get it. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's okay. So those acts.
Correct. The worst of the worst acts.
100%. 100%. That are now, as a prosecutor, what's the law now? Somebody does that, what are they charged?
So
the possibility of punishment?
Right now, currently under the law in Alabama, if this happens to a child that's under the age of 6, the range of punishment is up to life without the possibility of parole.
Okay.
If it's life without parole for under the age of 6. Under the age of 12, the range of punishment is 20 years to life in prison.
Okay.
So what this would do, and what I've tried to explain to everybody is this is not mandatory. It's not something that would be automatic. It's very it's mirrored the way the bill is, the way murder is charged in Alabama. It's not all murders are capital murders. There are some murders that are just regular murders.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the opportunity, the prosecutor would have the opportunity to evaluate and say, hey, you know, this is one of the worst. This is something that we need to look at and potentially pursue the death penalty for.
So it gives them that option.
It gives them that option. Then they would have to present it to a grand jury. The grand jury would have to determine, yes, we want to proceed. We would agree to capital rape, rape. Then at that point, it would go to a jury and they would have the guilt versus innocence phase, and the jury would have to determine whether the person is guilty or not. And then the next phase, if they determine that he is guilty, would be the punishment phase. And so that's when they would decide between life without parole versus the death penalty.
Would the judge have input on that?
Not really. Generally, it's just the jury. The jury. We've kind of gotten rid of judicial override.
Because that was something that
was a thing.
Yeah.
They've kind of gotten rid of judicial override through there. So if the jury determines that this is
a capital,
this deserves the death penalty, then that would be a juror determination through there. So this is not an automatic, hey, you know, automatically get this as you go through. Like, you know, we wanted to make sure that there were levels to it that protects everyone to have the opportunity to make sure that we get it right, make sure that the prosecutors have different, you know, it's a tool for law enforcement to use. If someone say, hey, this is the worst of the worst, this is what we need to go after. You look at what happened in Bibb County. You look at some of these.
Last time you were in, we were talking.
Right. We talked about that.
Are those dirtbags right now, by the way?
They are awaiting trial in Bibb County. So I think,
it's happening right now. They're not going to get the death penalty.
They are not, because it's not
retroactive. If there were ever poster childs for it, and I'm not a big death penalty advocate, but if there are poster children for it, that's that bunch.
Absolutely. So it's what it's there for. It's what it's there is to make sure that the prosecutors have the tool to go after the worst of the worst offenders. And you know, it's not just something that's blanket, hey, everybody that gets this, everybody that does this. It's something that's to be used for the occasions that deserve it.
Okay. So, and that, I think a lot of people will agree that getting those people where there's never a possibility of parole because they're room temperature is, you know, or dirt temperature is a good thing. What about is there any kind of looking, like, I talk about this in other crimes, not this stuff. Is there a disincentive, you know, and sometimes like with the gun crimes, I've argued it's fine to have this heavy prosecution. I don't know if a gangbanger thinks about all the legal, do you think this would...
I think it does serve as a deterrent.
Okay,
like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's only a deterrent. Like, the only purpose of this is to make sure that the general public.
No, I think there's
won't do this.
There's justice.
There's
in
justice.
Yes,
yeah, 100% of being able, victims to be able to say no. We're going after the person that did this. The person that did this.
They don't
to
get
you,
to exist anymore.
They do not get to exist anymore. You're exactly right. We were in committee the other day, and people were like, "You're just doing this because you're saying some people need to die." And I'm like, "Yeah, exactly.
You
some,
did say that.
Some
yeah,
people need to die. Some people need killing." Mm-hmm. Because of the acts that they've done, I believe in the right to life, but I believe that your acts can forfeit that right to life based on what you've done on this earth. So it's one of those things of we wanted to make sure that we get the right people charged with it, to give the prosecutors this tool in their belt to go for. But I am a pro-death penalty person. I believe in the deterrence. I believe in the fact that this will, you know, number one, it sends the message to the victims. The person that did this to you will have to face punishment. Number two, it sends the message to the person that actually committed the offense of, I'm in trouble. They may take my life away from what happened through here. Number three is I do think it sends a message to the public as a whole of this is not tolerated. We're not going to tolerate this behavior. You can be put to death for what you do to our innocent victims through here. And so it serves a deterrent through that message. So you're sending a message on multi-levels. There's a lot of talk. People are, well, what about deterrence? Whether this is a deterrent or not, that's a factor, but it's not the only factor.
Yeah, and on this one, I'll be on your side. There's some others, counselor, that I'll debate on deterrence for death penalty. But this one, I think it's the justice part of it is so much bigger to me. Now, you have, is this going to be unanimous? Or
No, it's not going to be unanimous.
What's the pushback? Are they giving you, is it just that?
We had a committee meeting Wednesday. This was in committee.
They said you just want to kill me. Is that the argument?
That's part of it. There's a group that's opposed to the death penalty. One of the things that I completely disagreed with the argument. One of the attorneys that's on the Judiciary Committee, Chris England out of Tuscaloosa, was saying that this is just going to allow a perpetrator to tell a victim, oh, if you tell somebody, then they're just going to kill me. So that would mean that the victim won't go forward and tell that. And it's like, no, that's what they do now. It's the same. I mean, it's no difference in them saying, oh, if you tell somebody, I'm going to go to jail forever. If you tell somebody, I'm going to hurt your mom or your family's going to be in trouble.
Right.
Or, you know, I'm either going to be in trouble or
yeah, unfortunately,
I'll hurt you.
You've seen this as a prosecutor firsthand. They do this stuff already.
They do this now. That line of argument of, oh, this means people are just going to say this. So what are you saying? That we should not put people in prison because they're going to threaten if you tell the victim, if you tell somebody you're going to prison, I don't agree with that at all. I think that there's, you know, I think there's a group that's just opposed to the death penalty as in whole, and so they're going to come out as opposed to it. I think, you know, unfortunately, this is a party, it's become a partisan issue. I think there's, you know, when we passed in the House last time, there was like, I want to say 12 or 13 no's. There were some Democrats that abstained. There are some Democrats that just oppose the death penalty in general. And so because they're opposed to the death penalty in general, they're opposed to the bill. But I've had several come up to me and say, look, these people need to die. These people need to be put to death.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some, you know, there's people that have like a puritanical view of certain political beliefs they can't wiggle. I am, you know, this is not for today's show, but I am not a big death penalty proponent. But there are some things I see where I go, you know, it rarely used certain cases and this kind of works its way in here. But you think you get the votes?
Oh, yeah. I feel really confident I have the votes. I mean, I can tell you that because we had the votes last year that came out of the House. It came out of the House Judiciary Committee.
The Senate's not going to mess with it, is it? Do you think they're going to?
I don't think so. You know, it passed out of Senate Judiciary last year. A lot of bills died in the Senate last year. This was one of them. I think, you know, I'm very, very, very grateful to have April Weaver as the sponsor in the Senate.
She's been a strong voice.
She is fantastic.
And Bibb, that's her
district. She called me right after what happened in Bibb County and said, Matt, this bill's too important. What can we do? What do we need to do to get this done? We went up to D.C. The legislative group went up to D.C. and had a meeting with the Trump administration. The Trump administration
They're talking about
this bill was a priority for them. I mean, this is a national movement to try to overturn that Kennedy case. And because we're trying to do that, the more states that get on board and pass this type of legislation, the better, the stronger the argument is to overturn that Kennedy case.
And this is what we had talked about last time. We'll come back and talk more about this with Representative Simpson, kind of the mechanics of why this is important. And other states doing this to make an argument. He'll explain it to us when we come back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right. right. 1224 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Reminder, too, 1 o'clock we'll be kicking off this year's Moon Pie Minute. And as always, we have a party in here. King cake and all the good stuff to get rolling. Moon Pie Minutes roll from today the whole way through Ash Wednesday, even on the weekend days, the whole way through. And it is the story, as my late friend and the founder of the Moon Pie Minute, Rennie Brabner, used to remind me. I'd sit there and say, well, it's the history of Mardi Gras. And Rennie goes, Sean. Mardi Gras is a thing that has a story more than a history. But there's a lot of history in it, because I sat down with Stephen McNair as we were recording them this year. You may say, why is Mardi Gras so early some years and so late some years? Well, you're going to find that out and a whole lot more the whole way through Ash Wednesday on the Moon Pie Minute. Continue our conversation with Representative Matt Simpson. You said this when we talked about it before session started, and I think this is also important. There's intrastate and interstate reasons on this, and it was to challenge, because TMAC says, if you overturn Kennedy, does that open the door for more laws to be able to add this crime or that crime to the list of capital crimes?
Kennedy is specific to child rape. Kennedy is specific regarding child rape. If you want to evaluate other cases as they go through for other instances, that would be a separate issue to have to go through from that round.
But the idea is, right now, you said the court says...
The court says under Kennedy that it's unusual punishment for the violation of the cruel and unusual clause of the Eighth Amendment. What they're saying is, what they said at the time in 2008, is that there were only five states that had this, that had this type of punishment for child rape. And because there were only five states at that time, it was unusual punishment, therefore violating the Eighth Amendment, and therefore that's why they ruled it unconstitutional. What we've had since then is there's been a nationwide push, and it started in Florida in 2023, where they passed this bill. Tennessee passed it in 2024. 2025, Idaho, Oklahoma, and Arkansas passed this bill. So what's going to have to happen is one of those states is going to be challenged with this. This one of those convictions is going to have to go up to the Supreme Court and challenge and say this is unconstitutional. The goal is to have, when they come through, that argument to be, it may be Alabama. I anticipate it being Florida. Florida's already challenged, already had one arrest and charged under this.
Okay.
They haven't had a conviction yet. They're going through the trial process. I mean, they're getting up to the trial process. But what I want to have is, when Florida goes up and argues in front of the Supreme Court, they say it's not unusual. Look at all these other states that are doing it now. So therefore, we've changed the evolving standards of decency, have changed. More states are pursuing this punishment. I'd like for Alabama to be on that list and say, no, this is acceptable as we go through.
You know, Representative, I asked you this last time, and this is kind of ham-fisted of me, but how many states do we count before it's not unusual? Is there some number?
I don't think there's not.
Like, is it 23? Is it 25? 26? A plurality?
You know? There's not a line in the sand. It's not a definitive to say this is what it is. It's going to be what the court says. It's a different court than it was in 2008. The court now is much more conservative court than it was in 2008. You know, and I had this debate came up in committee meeting on Wednesday, and one of the Democrat members said, you know, this is unconstitutional. The court has ruled that it's unconstitutional. Why are we spending money to fight this? Why are we just not accepting what they've done? And my argument was, the court has been wrong before. You look at what they've done Plessy versus Ferguson. Mm-hmm. You look at what they've done in Brown versus Board of Education, separate but equal. The court's been wrong. That's the basis of our entire system of government, is a checks and balances of the three separate branches of government. So just because the court rules something, the legislature still has the right to come up and still try to challenge and figure out what's going through there. It's not that the Supreme Court is the supreme branch of government and everybody has to listen to what they have to say. There are ways to go about challenging it, and this is the correct way to go about doing it.
No, it does.
Using those branches of government to do that.
And it's when you first brought this up to me, I like it because it's specific. The challenge is not whether this is a good or bad thing, y'all. I mean, the Supreme Court agrees this child rape. I don't know anybody out there think it, but they said the punishment was unusual. Mm-hmm. They gave y'all the thing that was why they held up on the Kennedy case. So if you change that, now it's not unusual. It seems like they didn't say because unusual and all these other things. They said because unusual.
Because it's unusual. And so that's
so there's a certain number of states. And I don't know what it is in the justice's mind, but at a certain number, it's not unusual and it can stand.
Exactly. So that's what we're trying to get to. That's the argument that we're trying to make. You know, that's the silver bullet we're trying to do to pierce the veil to say, no, there's more states that have this. And there's been other states that are, I know Mississippi is looking into it. You know, I'm an SEC fan, so mm-hmm. you count the states. You start looking Florida, Tennessee, mm-hmm. Arkansas, Oklahoma, Alabama, you know, as you go through there. And the South is predominant in this. Kennedy was a Louisiana case because mm-hmm. Kennedy, because they had it. So, you know, it's one of those things of, this is the way the government works. This is the way that our founders had it. This is the way that they wanted to. Things should be challenged. The court should be able to come through some of this. And
they taught, that's what I mean, you obviously get it. You taught it to me, but I want the audience to listen to the, they told you what they wanted to have. They said it's unusual.
Mm-hmm.
So in my, you're the attorney. I just took the LSAT and didn't do it. But I mean, if I look at it and say, if your issue, Supreme Court, is unusual, now it's not unusual, then the ruling should be in favor of capital punishment for this.
That's exactly right.
All right, coming back, more with Representative Matt Simpson right here on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. That's my buddy Trey. He's been doing it for 18 plus years now in Mobile and Baldwin County, getting rid of junk. And I've said this before. Here's your pro tip of the day. If your New Year's, one of your New Year's, maybe your only New Year's resolution was to get organized in 2026, my pro tip is, how about this, y'all? Put this down in a book. Maybe I took it from Confucius. Easier to organize, fewer things. So if you have junk around the house, stuff in the way, get rid of it here in the new year. And it's really easy. Use him personally, use him with this radio station. And 1-800-GOT-JUNK actually makes an appointment. So if you go pick up the phone, the name is their number, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or you want to do the web thing, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. They're going to find, get this, y'all, because I just dealt with this last week for something for my mother, where they told me, yeah, they'll be there sometime between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. You're like, well, I have to work. They will find a day and a time, and set an appointment. In other words, it's Tuesday at 5:30 or something like that. You've got an appointment. All you got to do when they get there is point at the junk you want gone. They quote you a price right there on the spot. It's just that easy. If you say yes, they go to work, get it done. It's done and out of your life then. So it could be junk at your house. I've pointed out junk around your house. Trey always reminds me. He said, Sean, we move big stuff all the time. Above ground pools, storage buildings and backyards, big trampolines, all those kind of things. And get rid of those too. Junk you want gone, get it done in 2026 with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And tell them I said hi to Trey, or Trey, hi Trey. We continue our conversation with Representative Matt Simpson. We talk about the capital punishment for child rape bill, but also first week in session, kind of early start to a session. I'm told that it is it's mandated to be a certain number of days, but there's ways to have a speedier 30 days, and right, this is going to be kind of a faster-paced session.
It's going to be a little bit faster-paced. So we've got, under the Constitution, we have 105 calendar days from the start of session, and to in those 105 calendar days, we have 30 days that can be used as legislative days.
So, y'all, the window 105 days to drop the 30 days inside of?
Correct.
Okay.
So we started in the quadrennium, the way the quadrennium works, this is the last year of a quadrennium. So this is an election year. So we start early. We start the second week of January. So January 13th, this past Tuesday, was the first day of session. Normally, we go in the second week of February. Mm-hmm. So it's just a month up to push up to go through there. So when we've got this year, we'll do a lot more three-day weeks. So generally what happens, and you know, I don't want to bore your audience, but generally what we do is we drive up Tuesday morning. We go into session at around 1 o'clock Tuesday afternoon. We'll go until whatever time we need to get done. Sometimes that's midnight. Sometimes that's five. You know, you just never know how long it's going to be. Wednesdays are generally a committee day where we handle committee.
That doesn't count as one of the 30.
A legislative day because we're only in session on mm-hmm. that Tuesday. And then generally we go into Thursday morning, we'll have a legislative day, and that's when we'll hear bills on the floor and we're actually in the chamber. So for the most part, we're having 2 days a week of those times.
But you're up there for 3 days. You're doing representative stuff for 3 days, but only two of the days count towards the number.
Correct. Okay. So what we're doing now is we're going to have 3 day weeks, and we started doing 3 day weeks a lot this quadrennium. We've had 3 day weeks. This isn't just this session. We've done it a lot. So we're going to have 3 day weeks. We had a 3 day week this week, so we've already finished day three. This up next coming week will be a 3 day week as well. We're in session Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So, you know, you start going through days like that. We generally have one spring break, and we also have a constituent work week.
Y'all had two spring breaks last year, I think.
They called it a constituent work week.
Because,
so
you know, I gave y'all hell on that. Yeah.
We still got our 30 days in them, 105.
I know. I can't help myself.
So we're not doing that constituent work week this time. So that's another, you know, bump that we can move up to go through the calendar. It's one of those things of we're not shortchanging the people. And Sean, I'll tell you, some of the safest times for the people in Alabama is when the Alabama legislature is not in session.
So, yeah, that's what we all say. Yeah, we're glad when you're not.
We're glad we're not. So we're going through it. And you know, it's just because it's an election year. We go up. The election is May 19th. So you want to be back home and back in your district and do what we can to be able to campaign and be able we need to do to run for reelection. But you don't shortchange the people. And the people aren't getting shortchanged of what we're having. We're still going to use, I anticipate using all 30 days that we have through here.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the things that will occupy some of those 30 days. Some years, it's like things come up, because, I mean, what y'all have to do is the budgets.
Correct.
I mean, that's the one thing you got to do.
Got to do it.
Of course, I'm driven crazy. I do know why. I'm not naive, but I'm driven crazy that that's often the last week. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, hey, how about y'all do this? I understand why not, but let me play naive person for a second. Uh-huh. Y'all go in there and pass the budgets in the first two work weeks, right? Mm-hmm. There's 3 day weeks, and then go, okay, we're gonna get the other stuff. Of mm-hmm. course, it doesn't work that way.
And it's the give and take. Look, it doesn't make sense, but it's a chaos, but it's a beautiful chaos. And the extent of sometimes you have the budgets rotate. So 1 year, the general fund will start in the House and the education fund will start in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And then the next year it flips and the general fund starts in the Senate and the education fund starts in the House. So you've got to get the bills through each individual body first. And the gamesmanship that comes along the politics.
If I only had pearls to grasp. Yeah.
So they come through and it's, you know, the governor gives us her budget that she mm-hmm. gives after the state of the state. She gives it to us, says this is what she would like to see. We come back and we evaluate and we sit down and members have different ideas on what they need to do and what we need to add and what we need to take off and where we're going. They generally, they start from where the budget was last year. What was, you know, they put a tab and said, this is what this was budgeted for last year. This is what the governor wants. This is what we're budgeting for this year. So you kind of look in and evaluate and see where everything is. You want to see what your receipts are. You want to make sure that you're not overextending yourself. We have to have a balanced budget. We've done a great job since the Republicans took over in 2010. One of the words that you have not heard from anything is the word proration.
Nope.
We've done very, very consistent, conservative budgeting to get through. So we haven't had proration. We've paid off the rainy day fund. We've paid off debt that we're supposed to have. We're able to get through. A lot of states went through when they got these ARPA funds and these, you know, everything when the federal government was just flooding money into the mm-hmm. states. Some people were hiring people and creating jobs. And we understand that's one-time money.
Yeah.
If you can give somebody one-time money, you can't come back the next year and say, oh, by the way, we're out of money. We need more.
Right.
It's not there. So we tried to do things conservatively to say, we're going to be able to get through this, but we're going to have to do it smart. And that's what we did.
Yeah.
And so we're getting up there and it's not... I know it's crazy. I know it sounds bad, but you know, we could go in and everybody could come in and say, I want this, and we're going to spend crazy and give everybody exactly what they want because everybody knows I got to get back in my district, so I need this project mm-hmm. or I need this or this is my pet project to come through. That's just not the way we go about doing it. We go through and say, you know, we'll do what we need to do. We'll do what we can. If you have a good, legitimate cause for what you're trying to do, that's what we'll try to help you figure out a way to get it done. But it's not something where it's just a blank check because it's the people's money.
Listen, I heard, you know, Senator Orr was talking about some gray skies ahead and talking about the interest that Alabama was, you know, with that federal money that we were making on that. And that's, you know, obviously running out. Where that puts us, we talk about the ETF some, but the just looking – we're talking about what, I don't know what we're at now, but I think it used to be like 93% of the general fund is just earmarked. Y'all, there's, we're I don't know if it's 6-7%, whatever it is, but it's a minority amount that's being debated, mm-hmm. right?
Right. You know, you've got...
It's not the entire 100% of general fund because it's a bunch of earmarked.
Nowhere near. And so you've got... The Education Trust Fund is taken off the top. That was around $10 billion last year. I'm just waiting to see what the final numbers are going to be for the budget this year. The general fund is everything that's not education. So that's your roads, bridges, your employees, your buildings, you know, everything that's not dealing with education. So your airports, your things like that. And a lot of that is already earmarked. A lot of that is already, you know, in place of this has got to have this. This is committed to this. So it really is just fighting for, you know, 7% of the budget to come.
So, and with that being said, you know, that you talk about ETF and I think about CHOOSE Act, right? And that debate. I heard the governor the other night talk about they get $250
million. $250, yep.
And I was, when CHOOSE Act first passed, I was asking this, you know, maybe I wasn't the only one in the state. I kept saying, and I'm no math magician here, Matt, but I was doing the math. I said, the number of families that fall under the family of four, $93,000 in the state of Alabama. I just pulled some numbers and I said, and just my guess that how many of those families would desire to use this. I said, there's not going to be enough money. It's going to be like a derby. And I went, so when it's passed, I was like, are we doing something like, as much as I like the fortified roof program, something that only so many, like, you know, it's a, only so many people get in. And I was like, you know, that's going to be frustrating because if your child's at this point, they're in the bad school and you're trying to get them to a better school and they're at that that pivotal age in learning, how frustrating that is. Ah, we didn't get it this year. That we didn't fully... there weren't enough funds for everybody to get in. I don't know if the 250 reaches that or not. But.
It doesn't. We wanted to put guardrails. Again, it goes back to conservative budgeting. We wanted to make sure that the people that needed it the most had access to it. So we kind of put the parameters on the on how much money they could bring into the house.
I think that's good.
Come through. And you know, it was one of those things of you don't want to start it and just bankrupt and say everybody applies and goes there. So you put a limited amount of money to come in, see how it works to go through. An overwhelming response.
I mean,
from
it was
the public.
Pretty fast.
It was done like the day it signed up, it was almost on. So we put more money into it to allow more families to get through. You know, unfortunately, it's a situation, and I don't think it's an Alabama issue. I think it's a Washington issue as well. You know, in politics, they tell you one of the things that's the truest statements I've heard is the answer is money. Now, what is the question?
Somebody needs to crochet that on a throw pillow. Yes. So, I mean, that's awesome.
You know, you look at where we are. When I started, I was elected in 2018. So I came in, they'd already done the 2019 budget. So we're looking at fiscal year 2019, fiscal year 2020 is the first year of coming through budgets through there. The education budget was, I want to say, somewhere near six.
Okay.
Okay. And then it was the general fund budget was somewhere near two.
Yeah.
B.
Yeah, not million, y'all. Billion.
B with a billion.
Yeah.
It may have been less than six. Let's just say ballpark it was six.
Okay.
Don't hold me to that. Okay. Some texters probably texting right now. No,
hey,
it was actually six. I went to law school because there would be no math.
Yeah. That's what they recruited me for, that same reason.
Now, here we are, the 2026 fiscal year. So the 2025 thing that we just did that we've approved already from the last one was 10 B with a billion. So there's been a $4 billion increase to the budget in education.
So I'm trying to see, once again, I don't know math. That's a 60% increase.
That's a pretty substantial increase on what you have to. We've done a lot to give the money back to the people because you can't just say, hey, let's just throw all the money in education. It goes back to how much is enough.
We were shown that number. You know, I was talking about that with a friend yesterday about this who was upset, you know, on some of the things on the CHOOSE Act. I said, and I wish I could have pulled up the podcast from when I talked to, I think it was Tricia Crane, and they had done a study somewhere near Birmingham and watched the school system as, because the funding was not very good. You go back 10, 15 years ago per student. It went up and it did hit a point where there were no realized gains beyond that amount. And I don't have it in front of me. Was it 8,000 or something per pupil? After that, additional dollars changed nothing for grades for those students. Like, there is a spot where below that spot, you don't get it. But above that spot, you get no other return.
I would challenge us to look at what per pupil spending in the state of Alabama is compared to the states around us. And I guarantee
we're not slacking. No, we talked about it back then. If we're not at the top, we're just one or two down.
We're there. And so that's ways we've been able to come back. And when we cut the grocery spending tax in half, $1.5 billion tax increase, tax decut back to the people, that's money back in their pocket.
One of my favorite things.
That sales tax money was education trust fund money we gave back to the people through there. This CHOOSE Act is it's an option. It's not saying you have to use the CHOOSE Act or the CHOOSE Act is the way we're going. It gives people a choice to be able to say, what's working here does not work for me. How do I have access? How do we get more people? If you're in a downward spiral of a terrible school system and you want to be able to have an option to get your family out to break that cycle, that's what it's for.
Yes.
That's what we're trying to do. And
yeah, everybody said, this is just for rich people to send people. It's capped family of four, $93,000.
Right.
And I don't know if y'all have looked lately. $93,000 isn't exactly like what Scrooge McDuck. You know, I mean,
you know, $93,000 in 2018 was a lot more than $93,000 in 2016.
Family of four, mom and dad are working their butts off at $93,000 to make ends meet.
And that's a lot to do with what Washington did by inflating the numbers. So what we're trying to do is put money back in the people's pockets. It's our job to be stewards of the money. It's not our job to be stewards and say, oh, this is state money or this is my budget and I got to make sure it stays in my budget or I got to stay sure. It's the people's money. It's the people's money. It's our job to be responsible with it. One of the most responsible ways we can be responsible with money is to give some back to the people.
Yeah, indeed. And one thing before we go to the break, too, if I remember correctly, with the CHOOSE Act, some of the money, whatever the allocation per pupil per school, some of it obviously moves with the student, but there's some remainder that stayed with that school system. There was some amount that stayed with. So to me, that gives that failing school maybe a little shot of adrenaline because there's money still staying there without that people with smaller class, but more money.
Correct. You've got
people. So that is, I do remember that correctly.
That's my understanding as well. You can get, I promise you, the details of the education budget and how this stuff works is, I'm the law and order guy. When you start telling some of those things.
I've had Senator Orr talk about it, but I do. There's some number, some amount that remains with the schools. So to me, that's like a little, shot in the right direction for that school that's failing, that okay, they have fewer students, we got a little more resources, let's change this.
The classroom size is smaller.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming back, more with Representative Matt Simpson right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Representative Matt Simpson in here. Jason says, Mr. Simpson is a doer, has a great attitude, and thanks for having him on. Michael says, if people look at it fiscally, true school choice saves the state money because they give each student roughly $7,000, while they spend over $14,000 per student they educate, so it's a $7,000 savings for every kid who participates. Or, okay, maybe that's the number, but that amount stays with the school, which to me would be the best medicine. If a school's failing, we can look at them now and say, y'all got more money and fewer students.
Not a bad result.
Let's get it done. By the way, too, you commented at the break because, yes, the King Cake has arrived for our celebration next hour with the kickoff of the Moon Pie Minute, and the representative is upset here because of New Year's resolutions and
I'm King fired cake. Up, and hear me out with this, Sean. And this is a pet peeve of mine, and it's probably because I'm born and raised down here in South Alabama, born and raised in Mobile. You start the New Year's resolution in January. What's the big event in January? The Super Bowl. It's done by the Super Bowl. Yeah. You've got snacks and food at Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Then you're rolling right into Mardi Gras.
Yep.
Then you're rolling right into Valentine's. Then you're rolling right into Easter, and kids get Easter, so you got candy all through there. Hear me out on this. The new resolution should be July 5th, because you have the July 4th celebrate, you create the new year, you've celebrated the country, you've had the good run. It starts then.
Which is my birthday, so I can't do it then. I have to start on the 6th.
Start
so
on the 6th.
My birthday, yeah.
But you hear what I'm saying? There's not really anything until Thanksgiving. I mean, you've got Labor Day.
But there's not a lot. You're eating meats and stuff.
You're grilling out through there.
Okay, so you would say you make it like a July resolution, not a New Year's resolution?
History started July 4th, 1776.
And my independence, that's what you do. You make it, my independence from this thing I shouldn't be doing, I declare that tomorrow I won't be
there you go.
Eating I mean, pies.
You know, it's going to be cold this weekend. Hear me out, guys. It's cold this weekend. It's going to be really cold as it comes in. What do you need when it's cold? Chili.
Yes.
So you got to have chili, but people are like, oh, I'm cutting back on red meat, or I'm cutting back on this, or as you go this.
Don't bring chili into this conversation. We're not dropping chili.
Well, my wife is cooking chili on Sunday.
I'll be cooking chili tonight.
So that's what I'm saying. You put it July 5th where you don't have to worry about being cold. You change it up. Change the whole system. Change the game.
So if you don't file the bill this session, would you pre-file a bill for this next session?
I'm going full libertarian like you, Sean. That's not a government's responsibility. We're not putting the government.
There we go. I like it. I do like people like that who say, you know, there's some things that you should do. It's just not the government's job to do them.
100%.
Yeah. I mean, this has come up in like national debates. They say, well, don't you think this is a good thing? I say, absolutely. I think it's a good thing, and I think it's a thing we should do as a people. I just don't think it's government's job to do it.
Not the role of government. Sometimes it's the best thing. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
That's right, but I want to give you the ability to make dumb decisions.
Exactly.
But chili.
There are consequences for
chili. Chili's a good decision. I don't know about that. All right, so y'all are back next week?
We're back next week. Well, 3 days next week will be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm excited. I think that there's a strong potential that the child death predator bill will be on the floor in the House on Thursday morning.
Okay. And so, you said it passed out of the Senate last year.
Out of the House last year.
Okay, no, but they in committee?
In committee, Senate, Judiciary,
it passed. What I'm getting at, do you have any worries that there's going to be an issue in the Senate?
There's always worries. I feel good about it. We've had good conversations with some of the senators through there. Again, April Weaver is such a superstar, and her support in the Senate and her ability to get behind this, and she's already working it, and she's already doing everything she can to get this through. I've had tremendous conversations with Pro Tem Gudger in the Senate. You know, Speaker Ledbetter has led the charge through this. This is a priority for him. The governor announces that it's a priority for her.
Right. We know it's going to get signed off by the governor.
We know it's going to get signed off by the governor.
The only unknown right now is the Senate.
The only unknown is the Senate. But I feel good. I feel really good about having Senator Weaver to be that advocate for this bill. You know, that Bibb County incident happened in her district, and that's, you know, this has fired her up.
Absolutely. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Chili. All right. That got me thinking about chili. We'll be right back.